WBSI in the world. I'm John Batchelor. Michael Bernstam of the Hoover Institution joins me to look very carefully at the Russian economy under severe sanctions in an election cycle. Remember, Vladimir Putin running unopposed within these next days. London reporting, Chinese trade rebounds on electronics and exports to Russia. Foreign minister hails new paradigm in relations with Moscow as trade picks up. Michael, you don't need to say anything. You said this was happening 6 months ago, a year ago, that China was offering its ability to be the middleman, but not really China only. All the middlemen, all the entrepreneurs of the Great Silk Road are reborn in the 21st century. China's doing very well. And to my understanding, no sanctions can stop this. Good evening to you, Michael.
Good evening to you and the world of the 21st century is seeing two opposite forces. One is sanctions and another is globalization. And so Western countries impose sanctions on Russia. Great. 53 countries. On the other hand, you have about 200 members of the United Nations. Some of them are very large, China, India, Brazil. They do not participate in it. And so they immediately take the market niche. And immediately Russian oil flows to China, Russian natural gas flows to China, Russian oil flows to India. And all countries, big and small, near Russia, the former Soviet republics, Turkey, and, of course, China, they immediately become the middlemen, buying Western goods, semiconductors, important technology, reselling it to Russia. So Russia is now paying tens of billions of dollars more for its imports. And at the same time, it can can keep the supply chains, which is very important for Russia. And the trade with China has increased in 2023 and early 2024. It's now over $200 billion, which is a very, very large part of Russian trade. It's more than a quarter. For China, it's a small potato. It's just under 3% of its total trade compared with 17% with the United States, another 17% with the European Union, 10% with Hong Kong. The small Hong Kong has 10% of Chinese trade. So Russia is not terribly important for China, but China is extremely important for Russia.
A swap. Michael's explained this to me, and he will again. Russia sets terms for retail asset swaps with Western investors. Remember February 2022. Russia's never going to invade Ukraine. This won't happen. It's just a military exercise. And then, so at that point, Western investors in Russia had their funds frozen. They're stranded. At the same time, Russian investors in Western assets, think of Apple and Netflix. The Russians see it growing the way we see it. That's frozen on this side. And Michael tells me we're looking at 3.5 million Russian investors in Apple. And now they're looking for an agreement between Moscow and the banks of Europe and the United States to exchange in a swap. That's as far as I can go, Michael. What's supposed to happen?
What's supposed to happen is that when the war started, Western countries froze the foreign exchange reserves of the Russian Central Bank. At the same time, they froze private investments in the West. And those are retail investments. So small Russian businesses and Russian individuals purchased middle-class people small values of stock, Western stocks, 3.5 million people. Of them, 80% own under $1,000 worth of stock. Apple, Netflix, American banks, and Google, all that. And those people, suddenly, for them, it's a huge loss of money. And for Russia, it is a loss of prestige. At the same time, on the other side of the coin, it's a totally different picture. It is institutional investors, pension funds, hedge funds, large banks, which mutual funds, which invested in Russia, mostly in the company which produces diamonds called Alrosa, A-L-R-O-S-A. It's a diamond-producing huge enterprise, oil and natural gas. So those are large institutional investors which own tens of millions of dollars worth of stock in major Russian companies. Those are frozen in Russia, pulled together, put in a special account with the Russian National national depository. So what now Russia proposes is, let's make a swap. Let's create a pool in which we put together thousands and millions of Russian investors, and we will release the assets of Western, frozen assets of Western large funds to these individuals. Western investors will give the similar value in vouchers, and with these vouchers they could come to Western brokerages and to Western depositories and pull together thousands and thousands of small-time investments and receive cash, sell them and receive cash from the European and other Western depositories. So it's a complicated swap. The problem with this swap is very, very simple. The swap is complicated, and there will be auctions, and people will bid for it. But the problem is that the Russians will release the assets. Western assets frozen in Moscow, give them to the Russians, to the Russian small-time investors. But Western depositories cannot. They cannot release this Russian asset. They cannot give them to Morgan Stanley. They cannot give them to Goldman Sachs and my pension fund, let's say, or your pension fund, because they're under sanctions. So the Russians are proposing effectively something for nothing, that they will get something and Western investors will get nothing. So the Euroclear and other Western depositories said, so, look, this is their scheme, we will ignore it.
Refined oil. The last report I understood was that Russia was forbidding it to leave the country to export, and then there was a drone attack. How short are they of refined oil products? Are they able to keep up to their demand?
That's a problem for Russia, that they produce. Their oil production has declined by about 2%. The data is now a secret, but it can be deduced. And they try to retain their exports to earn foreign exchange. At the same time, they don't have sufficient amount for their refineries. And therefore, they blocked until for 6 months, the export of liquid petroleum products such as diesel and gasoline. And now small Ukrainian drones, which cost a few hundred dollars, suddenly attack Russian refineries. And on March the 13th, the largest refinery in southern Russia, in the place called, hard to pronounce, Novoshakhtinsk, which is in northern Caucasus, which provides refined products for agriculture and for industry throughout southern Russia, it was attacked. And for a number of hours, it was not producing refined products, and the supply chains were in trouble. And it is diesel, jet fuel, very important, vessel fuel, kerosene, and fuel oil. So all important products for the Russian industry.
So these attackers knew exactly what they were doing.
These attackers attacked four major Russian refineries. Three were kind of medium, one near St. Petersburg, three of some kind of medium importance. But this one in southern Russia is the largest in southern Russia and one of the largest in the country. So it's the important thing is, if this continues, this is kind of a substitute for a military war,
right,
that you attack the fuel supplies.
Michael Bernstam for the Hoover Institution on the Russian economy as Vladimir Putin prepares to be elected president again without opposition. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.